It's 2021. You're listening to an all-new Oz Media Report podcast. It's back for another year. This is the Oz Media Report. My name is Dan Barrett. On each episode of this podcast, we feature interviews with journalists, academics, industry professionals, and titans of industry to discuss the issues related to the Australian media industry. That will continue this year, but it probably won't be the weekly conversation that it had been last year. Frankly, I'm doing this podcast on top of a full-time job and on top of my other side project, Always Be Watching. Subscribe to the Always Be Watching newsletter at alwaysbewatching.com. It's a screen-based newsletter. It's about TV and movies and all sorts of fun industry types of conversations. Subscribe to it. You'll love it, I promise. Now, I've only got so many hours in the day, as I came to learn late last year, so that does mean scaling back a little bit on the frequency of the Oz Media Report. But the big question I know you're asking right now is, what the heck is going on with this very episode you're listening to? Boy, am I glad you asked. It's a good one. This morning, Rob McKnight announced that he's launching a streaming service. McKnight's a longtime Australian commercial television producer. He's been working on studio-based TV shows. He's worked as a news promo producer. His most recent TV role was an executive who developed the Channel 10 show Studio 10 from the ground up. He executive produced it right up until he got bounced by the network, and we'll talk about that with Rob in just a moment. But since departing TV, Rob hasn't really quite left TV entirely. He's had a stint doing some digital things over at News Limited. He's been working on a TV Black Box website and podcast, where he talks about TV. He also co-hosts a true crime podcast, and he co-hosts and produces a streaming panel show, The Ben, Rob, and Robbo Show, and I definitely know who at least two of those people are. Now, Rob, he announced the launch today of Live Plus. It's Rob reimagining studio-based live TV for an internet age. He's tight-lipped on exactly what the programming lineup will be, though you'll get a good sense of it from this chat that we have. He has been working on this for a little while now, and he'll have it launched by the end of the year. Now, I'm going to put my cards on the table and say I'm a little bit skeptical about this one. I think Rob's got a huge uphill battle to fight, but also, if anyone's going to make something like this work in the highly restrictive Australian market, I reckon Rob is probably the guy to do it. So I'm very interested to see what he's doing and where he's taking this. Rob and I, we have a very open conversation about what the service is and some of the challenges involved. It's a really good chat. Rob McKnight, thanks for joining us.
Mate, it's an absolute pleasure to see you again.
Oh, look, it's been, well, way too long. I actually saw you in person like a year and a half ago, and That feels like a lifetime.
I know. The world's been through a little bit since then. There hasn't been much seeing of anyone since then, but streaming services are taking off, Dan.
Yeah, I've seen that. I have been talking about this now for a good, 15 years.
Yes, you have. Mm. You have. You predicted. I remember I used to listen to the Televised Revolution podcast and you were talking about the death of TV and I was saying, it's not dead yet, Dan. It's not dead. And I'd fight with you. Argument, you know. And you are right. TV is now dead. And I think last year we really saw that. It got a bit of a upswing with COVID and people being home, but we really saw people go to streaming services. And it's also interesting that podcasting listenership is down. So there's some reports that because people aren't commuting to work, video consumption has gone up, but audio consumption has gone down.
Yeah, so there'll be people that argue against that, but it makes sense to me that with less people sitting on a bus, then you know, it's just not being consumed. And I should say, my contention was never that TV was dead, but really that we were in the last days of TV.
Yeah, I think you went a little bit early out of the gate, to be honest, but there's certainly been declines. And I think the biggest problem TV currently has is they literally are only focusing on that 7:30 time slot. So it's all about the big reality TV show. They're not programming a 24/7 network or even a 12-hour network. You know, they've got the news as their staple. They're a current affair or home and away. And really, it's all about the 7:30 p.m. reality show. And then after that, it's a dead zone again. TV is really inviting people to go over to these streaming services like Stan and Netflix and Amazon Prime Video.
Yeah. And now, okay, so we're talking here about you launching a new talk-focused streaming video service. And I thought before we actually get too far into that, it's probably important to talk a little bit about your background. So you've got a history working in old school linear TV. So you've got, you know, credits including Sunrise, Channel 10's Wake Up, Studio 10. it's probably fair to say that both your heart and your resume lies with studio-based charts. And I was wondering, is that maybe why you initially wanted to get into TV?
I love live television, and TV was always something that I just adored. I just don't know what else I would have done if I hadn't gotten into TV. It is absolutely my passion, always was my passion. It's no surprise to anyone that I ended up getting into TV. But I've done a lot of things throughout my 25-year-plus TV career. I've been a promo producer. I've directed live news in regional television at Prime TV. As a promo producer, I was involved in the 7 News campaigns when Ian Ross launched, and we got that news service to number one as a team. I've got to tell you, everyone will take responsibility when something does well. No one will take responsibility when it fails, but it's always a team effort no matter what happens. So, but then I was poached by Channel 9 to work my magic over on their news service and get 9 News Sydney back to the number one position. And we were able to do that with a great team with Darren Wick and several others involved, especially the hard work Peter Overton put in. And then Adam Boland gave me the opportunity for Studio 10. Now, there's a lot of other stuff in there as well. I did primetime shows. I was a producer on Sunrise. I helped launch the morning show. But you are right when you say studio-based television and live TV is my heart, is my passion. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mostly sort of cut to that because I sort of know where you are. I know you as a guy. You're a studio TV guy. And so it's kind of been interesting maybe paying attention to you the last couple of years because you've fled Sydney for the Gold Coast. You've stayed pretty noisy during all that time, but you're not really there like in the heart of television, even though you're spending a lot of time being involved in TV related, like adjacent things. And so maybe let's talk about that. Like, how are you filling your days while you're tanning on the Gold Coast?
Look at me. I'm as white as anything. I'm not tanning myself. I have an allergic reaction to the sun. Look, the fact is, if I'm to be completely honest, Dan, I had to get out of Sydney. You know, at Studio 10, I had let consume me completely. When I got fired, it was like having my heart ripped out. You know, I loved and cared for that show so much that when they fired me, I really couldn't understand. It just didn't make sense to me. I knew that I wasn't hired by management. I knew that management didn't understand Studio 10 and didn't understand why it was connecting with the audience. They had this thing that was working, but I wasn't their guy. I was employed by Adam Boland and Hamish McLennan, who was the ex-CEO. I wasn't employed by the people who survived all the culling and ended up there. And so I was never their team. And I, on some level, I always knew I was on borrowed ground or borrowed time with them. So, but it was still a kick in the guts. When you get fired, you sort of think, okay, well, that's okay. Not everyone likes you and that's part of life and that's okay. I think what got me was the nastiness when they wouldn't pay out the what I was owed, and that's why I had to begin court action. That's not something you ever want to do, but you're forced into that action and you know, like you're taking the people, the company that you used to love to court. And after all that, I went to News Corp, and News Corp was great. It was just a very corporate job and not very me. It wasn't creative. And this is, I'm not shit-canning News Corp at all. Just that role wasn't what I was as a creator. And I, at Studio 10, I had really, knowing that you're not liked by management places a great deal of pressure. What do you fight for? What do you give in for? And unfortunately for me, I tend to fight for what I'm done, what I believe in. And when I went to News Corp, I had nothing to fight for because that job was what it was. And so what I realized is that I wasn't coping very well with life and needed a big change in my life. So, which is why I just went, I had a really tough discussion with my wife, and we made the decision to get up, sell up basically, and move up to the Gold Coast. We've had a great 2 years up here, but during that time I have been pottering about. I've been doing TV black box, and this year to get back into that television frame of mind, I did launch the Ben Robin Robbo show. And I'll tell you why I haven't rushed in to doing jobs. I have not applied for one television job, Dan, and the reason I haven't done that is because I really lost faith in the idea of working for people who don't know what they're doing. I worked for Adam Boland. He knew what he was doing. You know, like, he is still my idol. He's a dear friend, of course, but he's still my idol in many ways, in that he had this energy to make television happen and to have an idea and make it work and connect with the audience. And you look at what he did during his reign on Sunrise, and this was some of the biggest television events we will ever see. You know, he did stuff bigger than primetime television on a shoestring budget. And when I was doing Studio 10, I took that philosophy. We were having ratings of 120,000. We reached on Monday 150,000. These are figures that were unheard of. And when people couldn't see the value in that, when I was being told to change all that, change what I was doing, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? You sort of look back and you go, but it was working. Why are you why are you changing what I do when what I'm doing is working? I don't mean that to sound arrogantly, because I'm just basing it on the ratings, right? And so the thing I've been trying to do over the last 2 years is work out, what do I want from the future? Yes, streaming is where things are going. You look at what Aaron Young is doing with Ticker TV. He's created a whole brand there and a whole service that is playing outside of the norms. And even TV Black Box, that website should not have succeeded to the point where it's getting 1 million page views a month, because the network should have been able to squash it. And let's be honest, one at least did try to do that and tried to put us in a corner and make sure that we couldn't survive. The problem is, we don't live in that world anymore where it's only print and television that are your major factors. Anyone can create content these days. You've just got to work out how you distribute it and how you get to your market and consumers and connect with an audience. You don't need the biggest audience share. I'm not a news.com.au, you know, but what I do have is a bunch of people who look at the content we put up on TV Black Box. And you know this with what you're doing with Always Be Watching. It's not about having the biggest audience. It's about having the audience that connect with you, and one, how you can monetize it if you can. And in this environment, it's really, really difficult. But two, how you can keep producing that content and growing your audience. And that's what I've been trying to work out for the last 2 years. I've been able to do that with TV Black Box. With the Ben Robin Robbo show, we've been able to do that as well. And it was the technology behind that that led to Live Plus. And I think I've just wasted your whole 15 minutes on one answer. So I'm sorry, Dan.
No, that's fine. I always go into an interview telling people, hey, we'll talk for 15 minutes. And then it's like 33 minutes. So it's all fine. This is going completely to schedule. Okay, so we've probably reached the point now where we talk about Live Plus. So this is, and look, we're talking about this on the 4th of January, 2021. You've announced, yep, as of this morning, you're launching a new streaming product. I don't quite get an entire sort of, I don't exactly understand what this is. So we're going to talk about that as we go through. But maybe we start with, what's the pitch for the service?
The pitch is, this is live entertainment. This is live plus on demand with a focus on celebrity and entertainment. There are other genres like fitness and true crime that will be part of this. But the pitch is, we're going to offer, we're tackling the gap in the market. So if you look at Netflix and all the copycats, because pretty much every streaming service out there is a copycat of Netflix. Even the designs, when you go to their pages, are pretty much the same. It's on-demand content, and really it comes down to whether you subscribe to that service based on their content. But what different are they doing? We know that Stan is now going for a sport play, which I think is very, very smart by the people running Stan, because sport can be a big subscriber. Costs you a lot of money, but it can be a big subscriber driver. So what I'm doing is, I haven't just looked for a gap in the market. I'm also going with a bit of gut and also a bit of what I want to do. But the gap in the market is live television. So networks aren't doing that anymore. You look at even shows like Big Brother and Dancing with the Stars, when it comes back, is being totally pre-recorded. Big Brother for this year is already in the can. I'm a Celebrity, which is usually on a 24-hour turnaround cycle, is done and dusted, except for the live finale. So I do feel that people like that element of live television, interacting with a TV show. So that's one thing I want to do. If you look at some of the stats now, there is research that suggests that people using Netflix will spend 7 minutes looking for content. So even though Netflix has these hours and hours and hours of content, people are still spending 7 minutes looking for something, and then they're still likely to go and rewatch something they've already watched before. What we are doing is having a linear service with an on-demand element all built within the same ecosystem. So you can go to this service and see what is streaming live. So it might be the Ben Robin Robbo show. It might be any number of other shows that we're putting on. But you can also watch it on demand at your own leisure. Now, what's interesting about this is that Netflix in France is currently trialing a linear service. So in France, they've got a, it's called Direct. And what it has is a, it's programmed all the content available on Netflix. So it goes from show to show to show, and it's just there. So it's, remember when you used to just turn on the TV and you used to discover things because you just turned it on and you watched it? Well, that's what Netflix is trialing in France, which comes back to what we're doing with Live Plus. There will be a linear aspect to what we're doing. And you will be able to interact. We will have, within the framework of our websites and apps, you will be able to offer direct feedback to the programs as we're going. That's not to say every program will just be a program about feedback. What I'm saying is it's an added benefit to the show. But ultimately, any service will live or die by the content. So we have to make sure that we come up with the content that will get people to take a look and keep people as subscribers. We're not after a churn and burn. We will have this service. This is why it's launching late 2021. We will have a month of full rehearsals for every show before we actually launch. Our programming slate is pretty much done. Our focus when we launch will be on 6 until 11:30 p.m. I can't start with the way we're doing the finances. I just can't start a 24-hour channel. It's just impossible. So what will happen, we will have live streaming from about 6 till 11:30, and then we will be replaying the shows on the linear service, but you will also be able to watch everything on demand. So that is essentially the short of it.
Okay, so you've announced three shows as part of your media release this morning. Mm-hmm. You've got two co-hosted by you and a third aerobic show. Now, I'm assuming that one's not being hosted by you. Please, Rob, tell me you're not hosting that show.
No, this is not the Rob McKnight Fest. And in actual fact, my hope is that ultimately, when this really takes off, and I believe it will, that we will have an array of hosts. And in actual fact, so what we have is we will have an entertainment-based, like an Entertainment Tonight type show, Australia and internationally focused, that will launch the night each night. And that will not be hosted by me. I will have nothing to do with it. So that will happen at 7 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, we will have a new program each night. So basically you might have Monsters Who Murder Serial Killer Confessions, which is one of the shows that we've announced. And maybe I'll be replaced on that when we actually get to the point. I don't know that Amanda, my co-host, would be thrilled about that, but that may be something we look at. So each night at 8 o'clock, you will have a different program, and that's open to pitches. 9 o'clock will be the Ben Robin Robbo show. Then at 10 o'clock, we have a show that will really talk to lovers of TV and what's happening on the traditional broadcast services that night. And it will also focus on what's happening on other streamers. So it will be the place, if you want to talk about television and reality TV, this will be the place you go. But we have some other shows we will have a Saturday night variety show. Once again, Dan, not hosted by me. So fear not. If you don't like me, you don't have to worry too much.
I mean, I'm picturing you as a dicky knee sort of a character in this scenario, but sure, go on.
Oh, yeah. I'll pop the back of my head up and show the bald spot. So yes, I understand that in the launch, there's a couple of things that I'm already involved in, but that's because I can announce those at this stage. But there are other things being worked on. But let me also tell you, there are some big names within the TV industry who are looking to get involved in this already. You know, like I've been having some very interesting discussions. We just need to see where they go. So my hope is that we have a service where we can pay people properly. And let me tell you, we only need 60,000 subscribers to be profitable. In all the financial modeling we've done, once we get to 60,000 subscribers, we are profitable. We are ahead of our monthly cost basis.
First of all, I guess if we're talking about live studio TV, are you actually building a studio for this? Or will content be more driven by conversations, kind of like what we've gotten used to seeing lately, which is more like Zoom chats?
Not Zoom chats. You've seen the Ben Robin Robbo show, which we have shown we can produce quality broadcast television. But yes, we will have a studio. Now, the big question at the moment is, whether that will be Sydney or on the Gold Coast, and that depends on some of the partners that come with us. Obviously, we are not limited in this day and age about where people can host shows from. But one thing is, and I don't mean to be rude, but look at the camera you've got at the moment. We're looking up at you. There's a microphone hanging over your head. That would not be allowed on our network. Anything that happens remotely will need to look like any live cross you see on the Today Show or Sunrise or The Project, where it's like a proper studio. So when we commission all the shows, when we hire the talent, the key will, what we will like to do is get most people in the one room, but it's not the overriding factor. If we've got some great talent that lives in Melbourne, you take the Ben Robin Robber Show, we do that in three separate locations, but we've all got proper studios and sets, but we make it look like there's an intimacy with the way we do the boxes. And actually, we did a live broadcast in our last week of programming for 2020, and the viewers actually went, that was great, but it didn't have the intimacy of when they're all in the boxes together. So the way we do boxes is very different to Zoom boxes, because we professionally do it. We can cut to people. We can cut to reaction shots. It's actually switched as we're doing it. So what we will have, yes, we will have studio. Yes, we will have a variety of directors / vision switches. And this will be a proper production. It just doesn't take the full infrastructure of a TV network. So a control room that you might have in Sydney, for Channel 1097, you need like two people in our control rooms. It's a very different proposition.
Yeah. I'm thinking benefits of a studio on the Gold Coast means lots of drop-ins from Ugly Dave Grey.
Oh, God help us. I got into a lot of trouble with him at one point on Studio 10.
Okay, so you said you're launching this in late 2021. Why are you announcing this today on January 4? Mm-hmm. I assume this is to drive investor interest?
Absolutely. So, it's a two-front. Investor interest, absolutely. I'm trying to flush any potential investors out. We've been talking to some people, but I want to hit the go button. You know, like, things drag and take time. And I think if you just get it out there, things happen quicker. So that's just me being purely honest. And also to bring content creators out of the woodwork, you know. So it'll be interesting to see who has those ideas. But I will say this, we are not community TV. We are not just putting any old rag tag up on the screen. This is as professional as any other organization or any other television broadcast. I don't want people to be paying their $6.95 per month and just seeing crap on the screen. You know me, you've worked with me, Dan, you've seen what I do, and you know that even when you record a TV black box, we go for the highest possible quality and everything has to be right. And that's what will happen with this streaming service as well. I don't intend to put crap to air. I've got my name all over this. If it's crap, then I'm crap.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll leave my pitch for a home butchery show alone. But look, you've mentioned a $4 million cost to launching Live Plus. Part of that's going to be building a platform. How far along are you with that?
We're actually quite a way. So here's the thing. We are breaking that up into blocks of 250,000. So investors can take as many blocks as they want, up to 16 blocks. And that gets them a certain percentage of the company, which is all available in the investor pack we're sending out to potential investors. But the thing is, we have been having negotiations with people, which for a variety of reasons, Christmas and whatever, haven't reached that final phase. So pretty much everything is on the table at the moment. But here's the thing. The reason why I've gone public is because I know we'll get there. Dan, this is my big idea. The finances for this are just exceedingly, overwhelmingly positive. The forecasting is conservative from a subscriber number, but the revenues that generate, we believe will be profitable within 7 months at the latest. And as more subscribers grow, our cost base doesn't grow until we decide it will. Once we get to 100,000, we have a secondary phase that will expand our programming slate. So basically, as you say, we're basically launching now to try and get the investment happening so that we can launch in late 2021.
Okay, so you're looking at a subscription charge of $6.95 a month for people watching. And I'll admit, this is where I start to get a little bit skeptical about the endeavor. So in digital media, we talk a lot about the attention economy, and that's exactly what it sounds like. Yep. So people's attention is limited and there's a lot of online distractions. So, for example, your service, Live Plus, you'd be competing not with Studio 10 or The Morning Show or Today Extra. You're also competing with Facebook and Netflix and Disney Plus and Paramount Plus and BritBox and CNN and Fox News and Sky News, Sky News UK, YouTube, Twitter, Stan, Spotify, KO, all the Foxtel channels, TikTok, etc., etc., etc. Now, there's also the personally defined value economy, and that's a term I've come up with. This is people only want to spend so much money a month on entertainment services. Mm-hmm. And after all, there's only so much time in a day. So you want to make sure that dollar's going to the best possible places. So I guess the big question is, what are you giving potential subscribers a reason for in forking out $6.95 a month for the service?
Look, I think all the points you raised there are really valid. But one thing I would say, I'm not aiming to be bigger than Netflix or CNN or Facebook. What I'm aiming to do is take a slice of the market with a point of difference. Now, I do believe there's a gap in what we're seeing on television and in streamers where I come back to that. The research shows you're spending I'm guilty of this. I go onto a streaming service and I'm flicking like, what the hell am I going to watch? What I'm trying to offer is something where you can go and hopefully if we get the content right, you will see show after show after show that keeps you in the ecosystem. You know, we'll have Ticker providing news updates. You won't even have to leave our ecosystem to get news updates. All I've got to hope is that we can get the content right, provide something that offers a real alternative and better entertainment than other streaming services that gets enough people to come and be part of this journey. And we've seen it. The Ben Robin Robbo Show gets so much press based on the content that we have. You know, so like we have good celebrities, we have good content, and the Daily Mail and news.com.au and Who and all these other publications have written about the content on the Ben Robin Robbo Show. So it's about also making noise so that people start seeing, well, what's this? Well, maybe I should have a look. It's also about factoring in a marketing budget. And part of that $4 million does factor in a marketing budget. But ultimately, once I get them there, we have to make sure that we keep them there. And it's interesting you say that. I was having a discussion with one of my advisors just the other day, and we were talking about, well, when do the costs start for the ongoing running costs? And I said, well, a month before launch. And they're like, well, why doesn't it start on day one? I said, well, because we need to make sure that when we launch on day one, that we have everything looking as good as it can be and we're not experimenting on air. This is going to be the key, Dan. And look, I'll tell you, I don't expect many subscribers in month one. That's why our forecasts are very conservative in a slow build to get to that 60,000. And I genuinely do believe we can get to 60,000 within 7 months. That's my hope. That's what I've put money aside to be able to do. And I hear your point about all the other content deliveries, but what is Facebook giving you? Facebook's giving you short clips where you know, like, what are the real numbers with Facebook? People scroll through and they see it for a second and that's counted as a click. I don't go to Facebook for entertainment, to be honest. I go to Facebook to find out what's happening with my family. What we're trying to create is a platform here where people can go for as a destination point to get engaging content that they're not getting in other places.
Yeah, look, I agree entirely with what you just said about Facebook. But the reason I mentioned Facebook specifically in that very large list of digital products is largely because if you think about, and look, this information is really coming from a couple of years ago and things have changed somewhat since my case study here. But you look at the complete decline of US daytime soap operas. And the number one reason that's actually attributed to those dropping off is because the desired audience for those soaps, instead of sitting there in front of the TV watching those soaps all day, they're now spending their time, spending a couple of hours on Facebook. Daytime soap opera time is now consumed by Facebook.
That makes sense to me. That makes perfect sense to me because people were living vicariously through watching characters on a soap opera. They're now doing that through their friends and family. You know, like you don't need a soap opera to be able to do that. And it moves faster on Facebook. You get more resolution than having to wait 3 years for, you know, two people to kiss that are standing in the same room, you know. So I totally buy that.
But I mean, that's the entertainment factor that it's bringing in, though. So it's not necessarily about watching those videos for extended time periods on Facebook. Really, it's the fact that you're sitting there scrolling, reading everyone's life. And that's what people are getting entertainment-wise from it. And so therefore, they're not spending as much time watching TV. They're actually, say, consuming that time with Facebook.
But, you know, during COVID, with more people home, we're seeing that more people are turning to streaming services once again and video on demand content. Because what's happening is that when you're in a work office environment, you are too afraid to be seen watching a Netflix show, even though you're on your lunch break, you're totally entitled to. You know it. If you're sitting there eating your lunch, watching something on Netflix, people go, oh, it's all right for some. Whereas if you left the building and went into the park and sat down, it's fine. But with people working at home, they can actually say, this is my lunch break. I'm going into the lounge room and I'm going to watch True Blood or whatever it might be that they sit down and watch. And that's why video consumption is rising at the moment. And I do believe we're going to see that trend continue because more people are seeing that they can work from home. People will return to the office for sure, but I reckon it's only going to be like on a 2 or 3 days per week basis, and we're going to see a lot more working from home. The other thing I would mention to you is that you could throw to me, well, Quibi didn't work, right? But I think it was the wrong content offering. Here's where people go wrong. They say everyone wants things faster, da 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 da. You know what? People still like sitting down and watching shit. You know, like I have no interest to pay $6.95 to watch, you know, a 5-minute show. If I'm putting my $6.95 on the table, I want a suite of shows that I can just watch, engage with. And that's the other factor that you have. Like you engage with Facebook, you can engage with these shows. The Ben Robin Robbo Show talks about hot topics. Our comments section goes off crazy because people want to have their say on the topics we're discussing, whether they agree with us or disagree with us. So people want their voices to be heard. And I think that's one of the elements that we'll be able to offer as well.
Yeah. I'm not a huge believer in short form content for the reason that you were just saying. The best case in point is the Joe Rogan Show. It goes for about 2.5 to 3 hours these days. People were watching that regularly on YouTube.
Yes, one of the most popular things on the internet.
Exactly. People watching it on YouTube. Now it's Spotify exclusive. They're watching it there. So, you know, 3 hours, I think people are willing to make time for things that they're actively interested in.
It's like this thing where people say a podcast can only go 20 minutes. Mm. Well, who made that rule? You know, like, and does it stack up to any bit of research? You know, like, I remember being, when I was at News Corp, they said, oh, podcast can only be 20 minutes. And I said, oh, what do you base that on? No one could tell me. Oh, that's just the rule of podcasting. No, it's not. You know, like, it all comes down to engaging content. So the short answer, I could have erased 20 minutes of this podcast by answering your question a different way. Why will people subscribe to this service? Content. It's always about engaging content. If I can't supply that, people won't engage, people won't subscribe. If I do, I can get subscribers through the door, I can hold them, and I can build on it. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you why people believe that podcasts should only be 20 minutes. It's because the people that are telling you that have a 20-minute commute coming from the eastern suburbs into Sydney CBD.
Now, there you go. These are people, this is what's wrong with TV, if I can go on a tangent for a moment.
Mm.
90% of people who work in television, or the people in charge of television, the decision makers, all live within a 20-kilometer zone of the buildings that house television. They don't live out in the suburbs. They don't connect with the audiences. They actually don't understand what drives audiences, which is my belief why television continues to lose audience. They see something that works. I'm a Celebrity last night did 1 million viewers. Fantastic result. It's not up against any real competition, but the feeling is only reality TV and sport can get high numbers. Well, how the hell do we know? Because we're not trying anything else at the moment.
One of the things I think about a lot is there's a US streaming service called Pluto TV. It's owned by Viacom CBS. It's 250 linear channels of all sorts of stuff. It feels like a very traditional cable TV package. You've got about 10 different movie channels. You've got a whole bunch of music video channels. You've got news channels in there. And when you start looking at the news channels, you find things that are in there like, say, OAN, you know, the Donald Trump, you know, fan network of the moment. Newsmax is in there. But then there's also a CNN channel. There's Sky News UK streams through that. And there's a whole bunch of smaller brands that you don't necessarily really know, but they are there. And they're no doubt picking up a small license fee from Pluto TV and building a viewership through that. How open would you be to taking live TV, or sorry, Live Plus, to a platform like that where you exist as a channel maybe in another people's suite of channels?
I am not the kind of person who would take anything off the table. Yeah. What you would do is look at anything and see what are the finances involved in it. Can we make more money doing it ourselves, or is this an extra revenue stream, as you say, if there's licensing fees? So, no, I would never take anything off the table. I think you're a madman in this day and age as things evolve to say, we will never do this, we will never do that. No, absolutely not. Who's to say that we, with the launch of this, someone doesn't come to me and say, okay, we like the idea of this service. We want exclusive access for 2 years and we'll foot the $4 million bill. You know, like that could happen. So there's nothing's off the table, mate.
This is probably more a ticker TV orientated thought that I've had in the past, but it certainly applies to the platform you're launching as well, which is I started thinking a lot about, there was a streaming channel, which is absolutely what you're talking about here. It was through HuffPost, so like Huffington Post. They used to do a live linear chat channel. And I don't know how familiar you are with that, but it feels very much that it's in the same line, which is that you used to go to their website and there'd be a tab at the top of the page saying live. You click into that and then you'd see a 24-hour, 18-hour, whatever it happened to be, stream of chat conversations and various types of programming dropped within that. How do you feel about the idea of maybe live TV not necessarily operating as its own thing, but maybe you get bought out by another company to operate as a live component to a larger beast?
Once again, open to everything, Ben. But the thing I would say, the difference here between this and what Huffington Post
I frame it that way because I don't think that HuffPo Live would have existed as its own product in the same way that if it wasn't connected to the website. And so this is where I sort of think a little bit about ticker TV and what you're doing, which is I wonder with the Australian population being the size that it is, it just kind of feels like a bit of a struggle to launch something like this without a larger entity being attached to it.
Well, a couple of things here. Ticker TV is a free service that has its own financial model. And what Aaron is doing there to make money is actually very clever. But that's not for me to say. But the way Ticker brings in revenue, I think, is quite brilliant, actually. And so is allowing him to grow and build. HuffPost didn't have the content right. As you said, it was just a lot of talking heads. It wasn't a television show. So it didn't have TV shows. So what you were getting on Live Plus is a variety of TV shows. I can tell you the Ben Robin Robo show, if you've ever seen that, is a show on this platform, but it is one of many. The show that comes after it will have a completely different look, different feel, different aspect to it. It's not news-based. You know, the Ben Robin Robo show is news topic-based with celebrity interviews. But another show is going to be looking at television that night and playing clips and talking about who we like, who we don't, interviewing the people eliminated from some of these shows. You know, there will be the celebrity entertainment news, high production values, actual having an agenda of what each show is and not just relying on someone to sit down and interview people one-on-one for an hour. That's not what we're doing here. We're producing like you would on a linear television broadcast. So Dan, one thing is you talked about, do we need to be part of something bigger and can Australian audiences sustain this? No one here said we're only relying on Australian audiences. At no point have I said we're geo-blocking. We own this content. There is no need for us to geo-block outside of Australia. Monsters Who Murder has had 3 million downloads around the world. I'm not just relying on an Australian audience for that. I'm relying on the people around the world to come and be part of this service to see this as a video format. So we create this content. I got no licensing deals in place. There's nothing to stop me from opening this up and having subscribers around the world. Then as we go forward, there's no reason why I can't replicate this service in America, in India, in the UK, and still as an Australian, be able to watch those versions of the channel. Why do I have to close that off? We are living in the age of the internet. Borders don't exist anymore. So the fact is, once again, why is it easier to get to 60,000 subscribers? We're in a population of 25 million. You know, Netflix has 3.4 million paying subscribers in this country alone. I'm opening my net to the world. I'm not turning down anyone. So I think there's real potential. Yes, it would be good to be part of something bigger. Great. That always helps. Not essential. We've got the marketing money. We've got the know-how. We've already factored in the building costs. We can do this with or without someone. It really makes no difference.
Yeah. Final question, and people who've been listening to the Oz Media Report podcast, they've heard Aaron Young on this a few months ago talking. I think he was on our first or second episode. He was pretty early in. But he talks about Ticker TV with the structure of it all. But I'm wondering what your relationship is with Ticker TV. So obviously you've had your Ben, Rob and Robbo show on Ticker TV. You had Aaron Young featured as a quote in your media release that went out today. Is there an ongoing business relationship there? Because obviously he's taking a show from his platform and spinning it off into your own. Like, where does that all sit in terms of friendliness with Aaron?
Well, very friendly. Otherwise, he'd tell me to nick off, wouldn't he? But obviously, before I launched this, I had a phone call with Aaron and explained to him my idea and what I'm doing. And he gave me some advice. And he and I have always had a very good relationship. And he understands why I am taking the Ben, Rob and Robbo show over to this streaming platform. And he's very supportive of it. You know, we've also had conversations where he has suggested we move the Ben, Rob and Robbo show into a 9 o'clock time slot this year, because he's expanding Ticker TV and going into prime time. And I'm all for that. I think we are a 9 p.m. show. That's why on this streaming service, we will be a 9 p.m. show. And coming back to it, as you said, Aaron's in the press release. He has already, in principle, we haven't done the deal, but in principle, agreed to supply news updates for this streaming service, of which I will pay for that, him to do that. And, you know, I think that speaks volumes about the relationship we've had. We both joined together pretty early, you know, like the Ben, Rob and Robbo show appearing on Ticker was a phone call where I said to, I sent him a DM on Twitter and said, I think we should have a chat. I've got an idea about something I want to do. And he was all for it. And he helped us build the studio. He gave me advice on what we should do. I'm a big fan of Aaron. I'm a big fan of what Ticker TV does. And no, whatever happens in the business sense, one, we would like to continue working together, but on a friendship level, I've never actually met the man in person, but I feel like I have, and I feel like I know him. COVID has stopped us all meeting, but yeah, no, I love what he does. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. So Rob, we should probably wind this up. I'm coming out of this. Look, I'm suddenly a little bit skeptical about some of the realities of the service, but I really like the idea and the ambition, and it's exciting to see that you're doing this. I want to see this succeed. And look, I'd certainly like to talk to you again over a few points throughout the year to see how this is going along in the build and actually see this happen. Because I'd certainly love to see this succeed. I just see a couple of questions along the way.
Sure, there's always going to be questions. But the one thing I would say, Dan, is throughout my entire career, people have always underestimated me. And it's always driven me on to fight harder, and I've always succeeded. Like, seriously, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that I've done in this industry that has failed. And that's because I work hard to make it right. And as I said, everyone has that one big idea. This is mine. Most people don't follow through their big ideas and they don't make that $1 million. I'm following through this big idea. And I do believe the people that get on board with this will reap the financial rewards. That's the big sales pitch, I guess, but that's not where I'm coming from with this. What I'm talking about is that it's easy to write people off and ideas. With all due respect, you don't know all the ins and outs of what we're planning and who's involved and what's going to be. So I get your skepticism. I look forward to proving you wrong.
I really want to see you prove me wrong.
I know you do. And that's what I love. And I said to you, ask me the hard questions. So Dan's not being mean or anything, anyone. I said, you've got to ask me the hard questions.
Oh, I could have been meaner. Rob, thanks for your time. I really do appreciate it. And yeah, I'm super excited to see where you're taking this. Again, skepticism is involved, but you know, let's see where it goes.
All right, mate. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thanks, Rob. That's it for the Oz Media Report for its return episode in 2021. Huge thanks to Rob McKnight for such an open chat. I didn't want to sound like a Debbie Downer on day one of him announcing his plans for the service, but also I think Rob's a tenacious and very capable guy. There's questions that need asking, but Rob's a battler, hardened by years of employment in the TV industry. I've got every confidence that Rob will fight like hell to make it work. This podcast will be back soon with more Australian media industry chatter. If you've enjoyed the conversation, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or tell your mates about it on your social media channels. Hit that share button and tell them where they can listen to it. The Oz Media Report is hosted and produced by me, Dan Barrett. It's a televised Revolution production. I'll be back very soon with another episode, I promise.